A new analysis finds that the lowest 10% of wage earners gained the most during the pandemic. From 2020 to 2022, wages grew nearly 6% for our lowest income workers, and that's adjusted for inflation. At the same time, but at the end of the pandemic era, government spending and the Federal Reserve's current push to curb inflation may claw some of those gains back. We're talking about wages and whether the increase in income for those who need it most is sustainable. And we'd like to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. How have your wages changed during the pandemic? And how has inflation impacted your life and your bottom line? 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Tim Smeeting is the Lee Rainwater Distinguished Professor of Public Affairs and Economics at the La Follette School of Public Affairs at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He is also the former director of the Institute for Research on Poverty. And Tim, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, Tim.
So we had a 6% increase for the lowest 10th percentile of wage earners. But at the same time, we saw a 5% decrease for the 90th percentile of wage earners from 2020 to 2022, largely encompassing the worst portions of the pandemic, and that's adjusted for inflation. What happened to wages over that time? What's the cause of this?
Well, that's a good question. A couple of things. First of all, we had a very tight labor market. Demand exceeded supply, and the pandemic wore down, and people wanted to go out. So in particular, restaurants and bars were hard hit. There's wages were too low, and all those people got a boost. But you got to remember, the base was really low, so it's not that big a jump. It still was good, and it still is, but you can walk around this whole city and see restaurants are open Wednesday, Thursday, Friday night, only or limited hours because they can't find workers. At the top, what happened was a little bit of a compositional change because a lot of older, better paid workers retired and younger workers came in. So that pulls the wages down. It's still a much, you know, better deal.
Is this sustainable? Is this something we're likely to continue to see with a tight labor market?
As long as we have a tight labor market, yes. The good news is that there's a lot of demand for low skill workers beyond bars and restaurants now. The expansion of infrastructure and construction, putting in all those Wi-Fi lines so more people can work at home and things like that all around the state. Those are all offer good jobs for low-skilled people. And the other thing is, however, though, the big problem with all this is there's going to be a lot of cutbacks in child care support. So that's going to make it harder for women in particular, or mothers or fathers, to go out and work, because part of the budget deal is going to end up cutting discretionary spending on programs like, child care support and the WIC program and all of that.
So from your perspective in terms of public policy, what role has public policy played in lifting up the wages of the lowest income earners?
Well, it played a role in a lot of ways. We had a child tax credit for 1 year, a refundable child tax credit in 2021. This was a godsend. It helped low-income parents tremendously. It would be there every month, but then we did away with it. During that period, people didn't stop working. They went out and worked more. They used some of the money they got from the child tax credit to buy child care, and that was subsidized further, too. But that's not to mention the fact that everyone was covered by Medicaid with no questions. So they had health insurance. You had access. You didn't have to find a job that had good health insurance. You were covered. Now that's all going away right now, actually.
Yeah, I was going to ask, some of the debt ceiling deal that was signed into law over the weekend looks to claw back some of the pandemic relief funds, but how much of those pandemic relief funds are the reason we've seen the lowest income earners seeing more wealth for themselves and their families?
Well, some of it is that clawback. It turns out, pardon my French, we farted a mouse. The whole thing ended up not saving a lot of money. The SNAP program, we added more veterans, but we told 55-year-olds you had to work, and by the time the math got done, CBO says we're going to spend more on the SNAP program. We cut the IRS's ability to chase high-income tax cheats, and the CBO says that's going to cost us money because we would have gotten back the return. So really what it was about, unfortunately, is there's a lot of people out there who just do not want to increase taxes in any way, shape, matter, or form. And the fact of the matter is the government can't go on spending 25% of GDP and financing only 18% of it. There's a 7% gap. We have to do something.
But the something has always been cuts. But what you've alluded to now is some of the public policy we've seen in the spending from government during the pandemic is some of the reason those who needed it most found the most during the pandemic.
Absolutely. Now, I mean, we stepped on the gas maybe a little hard, all these emergency income payments or whatever. But those boosted demand, but demand has kept on going.
But so has inflation, though, Tim, and I want to get to that
inflation is still there.
We'll ask our guest, Tim Smeeting, professor of public affairs and economics at UW-Madison, but I'll also ask you how inflation has impacted your bottom line at 1-800-642-1234, and we'll continue our conversation about the historic narrowing of the wage gap that we've seen during the pandemic and how that might not last. That's next on Central Time. Right now, we're talking about how pandemic-era policies reversed the decades-long trend of a widening wealth gap. Our guest is Tim Smeeting, the Lee Rainwater Distinguished Professor of Public Affairs and Economics and former director of the Institute for Research on Poverty at UW-Madison. Still time for your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or your comments about your economic situation, 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. So, Tim, the impact that inflation has had on our spending ability and our budgets?
It's mixed. It depends on what you buy and where you get your money. Part of it, though, these same low-income workers who have been gaining in terms of salary, we're finding out that if people borrow on credit cards, you're borrowing at 28 and 29% now because they've shoved the interest rates up so high. I think the Fed's going to take a pause next month, and I think they should, to wait and see, you know, how things work their way out. One of the things that's going on is there's a surge of immigrants, people already in the country. We've stopped them at the border in the last week or two. But there's 2 million people seeking asylum in the country who want to come and want to work. And we're making jobs more available to them. And they're taking whatever work they can get. And that means more supply of labor, which lowers prices, lowers wages somewhat. Mm-hmm. But still, demand exceeds supply so much, there's so much chance to move up that people are actively thinking, well, why do I want to work weekends and nights at this bar or this restaurant? I can get a regular day job. I can see my kids. Maybe I can get some childcare. I'll work, maybe I'll go be an apprentice somewhere. I'll do some construction, whatever. And I think that's all good.
With your expectation of the Federal Reserve pressing pause on trying to curb inflation, do you expect inflation to somewhat slow here going forward?
We can hope so. Part of it is oil prices. The OPEC's on its last gasp, and they're holding back. That's part of it. Food prices, too. In the summer, they should ease with more supply and more opportunity. The rental thing is tough, depending on if you're an owner, it's fine. If you've got a fixed mortgage, especially if you got your mortgage before inflation took off. But if you want to buy a house, it's really hard. And so it depends where you are.
And isn't that buying a house the way you build equity?
Well, first of all, first thing you need to do is develop emergency savings. You have to have that. And that's one of the things that child tax credit gave families with kids. There was money you'd have some money for an emergency. The earned income tax credit does that too, but you only get that back in February or March, and then there's nothing more after that. But if you can make sure you don't have to go run that credit card at 29%, or make sure you don't need a payday loan, then you can start thinking, well, maybe we can start saving to buy a house. Maybe mm-hmm. we should start saving for retirement. Take that IRA offer or that 401k offer from your employer. That all looks good if you keep working. And, by the way, if you don't have a big student loan debt, which creates other things.
Well, that is a recent story as well, as some student loans are going to have to be repaid here going forward.
It's time to start repaying them.
And that's not, as you see it, doesn't help the economy, fuel the economy?
Well, it hurts it. I mean, the people who can't afford to pay their student loans are people who can't afford other things, too. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll get some relief, but I doubt it. I think that the Supreme Court is going to tell Congress that if you want to give $500 or $600 million back, you have to pass a law. You can't just do that by fiat.
Tim Smeeting, you're the former director of the Institute for Research on Poverty, and it's a big, broad question, but I would ask you to boil it down. What are the causes of poverty? What creates it in the United States?
In the United States, a lot of different things. One in particular is that earned income isn't enough, particularly for single parents. Two parents have a better chance.
So we're talking about wages. We've been talking about the lowest income wages, and the lowest income wages would have it the hardest. But across the board, you're saying that we're not making enough money to alleviate poverty in this
country. Say you were making $8 an hour tending bar or something.
No.
Increase it by 50% to $12 an hour.
Still a struggle.
That's not enough. Right. That's not enough for one person working full year full time to pull their family out of poverty. You need two people, and then you need to get lucky with having health insurance and finding a place you can afford to live.
You mentioned child care a couple of times.
Oh, yes. Always child care. And child care is one of the things that's really at risk now because we need more appropriations. Biden had plans for expanding child care, but a lot of that's going to be cut back because it's discretionary spending, which is what the only place that Congress has left. Now, what we should do, what we should have been doing all along, is not taking Social Security off the table.
What do you mean?
Biden, in his State of the Union address, just said, you're not going to do anything with Social Security.
Cuts to Social Security?
Yes, cuts to Social Security. But you have to understand how, okay? You can institute cuts that take place 10 and 15 years out and save money on the budget. What you have to do is increase revenues by raising the ceiling on those rates back to cover 90% of wages and pay well-to-do retirees 10 years out a little bit less. That could have been done.
Okay.
That would have brought those numbers way down.
Tim Smeeting, you talked about the less than minimum wage worker making $8 an hour at a bar and having it bumped up to 50% to $12 an hour and how little impact that might have on the bottom line of that person, their income. But what about taxing the top 10% and what impact that has on their lifestyle and ability in the United States?
That is what we, of course, should be doing. And Biden is trying to do that, but he's not going to get away with it. But. The Trump tax cuts expire next year. Trump gave big cuts at the very top in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, TCJA, of 2017. In 2025 or 2026, those expire.
Don't we all benefit those rates from those go cuts? Back up. Those were the arguments that were made, Tim.
Right. Trickle down. John Kenneth Galbraith once said, trickle down means that if you feed the horses enough, they'll leave something on the road for the sparrows. That's what trickle down. Building from the bottom up or the middle up is the new thing that Biden is trying to do. And so he's trying to preserve and help the middle class, particularly those, people who borrowed money who didn't get a bachelor's degree afterwards, who went to a for-profit college and ended up with a big bill and no return in terms of earnings. And the infrastructure expansions and those sorts of spending are really going to help them. We need a lot of people in construction and a lot of people doing applied trades. There's big chances for that over the next few years all over the country.
You're a professor of public affairs and economics at UW-Madison, Tim Smeeting, but I hear a lot of connections between the causes of poverty and public policy, that public policy is what, to some degree, dictates poverty in America.
Yeah. You can't work alone isn't going to do it particularly for single parents, for most people.
You couldn't work hard enough to get yourself out of it.
Most poor people work. The vast majority of people who get the SNAP program work. Single parents work more than married parents in our country. It's just that you don't have enough hours and enough wages without some help with child care or something. Imagine you're paying $4 an hour for child care. What's that do to you?
$4 an hour?
Yeah, that's cheap.
So if you were to take public policy to use it to alleviate poverty, what would be Tim Smeeting's top priorities?
Well, first of all, child care. Make child care available. When we did W-2 here, Tommy Thompson had child care available and Medicaid available. So you could go to work. You wouldn't lose you would get child care support. We need more child care slots for low-income people, more subsidies for child care so they could work. Okay?
Yeah.
We need to allow them to move into better jobs. A tight labor market will continue to do that.
Okay.
Move into better jobs.
But that doesn't sound like a public policy issue then.
Oh, it is if you can help people get retrained and get ready to do these jobs.
What about health care?
That's a really tough one. What's going to happen is right now a whole bunch of people are being shed from Medicaid. Not so much kids, although if they cut the CHIPS program and other programs, or if they temporarily toss you off and it takes time to get back on, kids are going to have trouble. And we know the youngest kids need health care the worst. They need it. They need those original checkups. They need to know when they're having a problem. They need to be ready to go to school and so forth. And all of that's threatened by this big shuffling that's going on right now. Places like ABC Health in Wisconsin are helping a lot. But some people who are actually eligible will be temporarily derailed from health care. And that's probably going to create a lot more people at the emergency room and a lot more health problems that could have been prevented that won't be prevented.
Hey, Tim, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for spending yours with us this afternoon.
Thanks, Tim. Nice to be with you.
Tim Smeeting is a distinguished professor of public affairs and economics at the La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison, talking to us about the historic wage gains made by low-income workers during the pandemic and how likely we are to see that persist.